This is the Cancer Research UK podcast. Hello and Happy New Year. In this month's podcast, we look back over our progress in 2008 and hear about our new five-year research strategy, aiming to make a real impact on cancer survival over the coming years. Coming up later, we hear from our Nobel Prize-winning scientist Tim Hunt to hear how he's been finding clues to cancer in an unexpected place.
I wanted to study sea urchin eggs because in a sea urchin egg, they do very little protein synthesis when they're shed into the sea. But if they meet a sperm and get fertilised, then they turn on protein synthesis rather sharply and a lot.
2008 was a busy year for us here at Cancer Research UK, with 4,500 scientists, doctors and nurses all working hard to beat cancer. As you can imagine, it's hard to select the highlights from the huge number of discoveries that have been made, but here are a few of my favourites. In recent years, we've seen huge advances in gene sequencing technology, which Cancer Research UK has invested in. In February 2008, our researchers identified 7 new regions of the human genome involved in prostate cancer. A much-needed boost for researchers looking for new ways to diagnose and treat the disease. And last year, scientists also discovered genes involved in lung cancer and childhood cancer. Another important discovery was made only a couple of months ago, as scientists at our Cambridge Research Institute uncovered the molecular nuts and bolts that underlie resistance to the breast cancer drug tamoxifen. And we launched a clinical trial of a new drug called a PARP inhibitor, designed to treat breast and ovarian cancer in women with faults in their BRCA1 or BRCA2 genes. We also saw the publication of important clinical trial results, showing that shorter courses of radiotherapy were just as effective as longer courses for early breast cancer. And our researchers also found that radiotherapy could be just as effective as surgery for treating bladder cancer. This is particularly important for elderly patients, because surgery in this age group can have a really big impact on quality of life. And finally, Cancer Research UK funded scientists made an exciting discovery showing that bowel cancer can be fueled by rogue stem cells. Here's lead researcher Dr. Owen Sansom from the Beatson Institute in Glasgow to explain more about his findings.
So what we were trying to do was to work out where bowel cancer originates in the bowel, in terms of which cells are the root of bowel cancer. So what we wanted to do was really to see whether it is the stem cells which cause cancer. So we found that if we take out the APC gene, and the APC gene is the major gene that is mutated in colon cancer, so around about 80% of patients that have bowel cancer have a mutation in their APC gene, we found if we take out that gene specifically within the stem cells, we got rapid cancer formation within 20 days.
This is only a snapshot of our progress this year, and you can read much more about our work on our Science Update blog. That's scienceblog.cancerresearchuk.org. And you can also find out about our progress and achievements over the past 100 years on our news and resources website. That's info.cancerresearchuk.org/cancerandresearch/progress. Cancer Research UK has a history that stretches back over a century, and our work has had a major impact on the way that people with cancer are treated today and the improved survival rates that we now see for many types of cancer. But there's still a lot more that we need to do. At the end of November, we announced our new five-year strategy for research. I spoke to Chief Executive Harpal Kumar to find out why we need this strategy and what's in it.
In the last few years, we have clearly set out what we think our role is as an organisation, and we've also established 10 very aspirational goals for what we want to see achieved in cancer in the UK between now and 2020. What the strategy does is it tries to lay out what exactly we're going to be doing over the next 5 years to try and make progress towards those goals.
So tell me a bit about the background to it. How did you identify what we really need to be working towards?
We've gone through a large exercise of analysis and consultation with the research community, both within the UK and internationally. We have been very engaged with discussions around cancer policy issues and so on. And we've essentially collated all of that information. And assessed where the real needs are over the next 5 or 10 years, and therefore where we should focus our efforts, particularly related to research, so where we can really make a substantial impact at an international level in terms of improving prevention, improving diagnosis, and improving treatment of cancer.
What do you think are the major things to come out of this?
There are a number of things that are really important within this strategy. First of all, we will do work, we will continue to do work that is at the cutting edge in terms of being the very best research and research that will have the greatest impact. Now, within that, we intend to maintain those areas that we've always been strong at. So basic science to try and understand why cancer happens in the first place and how it develops. Discovering and developing new drugs that can treat cancer. Population level research so that we understand at a large scale level what sort of factors influence the development of cancer, and clinical research so that we can really assess in patients those treatments that work and those treatments that don't. So all of those are traditional strengths. But within this strategy, we've also developed a number of themes that we want to expand going forward. And so we've looked, for instance, at cancers where not enough progress has been made over the last 20 or 30 years. Areas like cancer of the pancreas, esophageal cancer, and lung cancer. And we intend to increase our investment in those areas. We've looked at types of treatment that haven't had enough research. So surgery and radiotherapy, where we know the vast majority of patients will at some point undergo either surgery or radiotherapy, but they both need more research to improve techniques and to improve the ability of those treatments to really make a difference in survival. We've looked at areas of new technology that can really help our overall research effort. Imaging, which is a very promising range of technologies that can help us treat patients better and can help us diagnose patients better. And so a number of areas in which we think over the next 5 years, by investing more, we can really make a difference. And all of this is brought together within our five main institutes and what we're hoping to develop, which is up to 20 centres of real excellence across the UK that bring together our research activities with the NHS service delivery and with efforts to really engage the local community in what we're doing, so that collectively we make, through those centres, a real impact in improving cancer across a number of different dimensions.
And so this strategy is for 5 years. Where do you hope we'll be in 5 years' time?
I hope that in 5 years we will have made further dramatic progress towards achieving our goals. So for every one of our goals, whether it be about improving survival, whether it be about improving earlier diagnosis, we will have made measurable progress so that fewer people, far fewer people, are dying from cancer.
If you'd like to find out more about our strategy, then have a look at our website. That's www.cancerresearchuk.org/aboutus. People often think of cancer as being a uniquely human problem, but many of the things we know about cancer come from rather unlikely sources. Fruit flies, frog eggs, tiny worms, and even yeast have given us important clues as to how human cancers develop and grow. This fundamental laboratory research is what underpins the cancer treatments of tomorrow. This month, our roving reporter Anna Lacey finds out how sea urchins helped our Nobel laureate Tim Hunt to learn about the cell cycle, the process that all living things use to make new cells.
The cell cycle is really the machinery that allows cells to divide, and if cells can't divide, then that's it. The trouble is with cancer cells, they grow out of control, and generally speaking, cells, when they get above a certain size, they divide. And the trouble is that cancer cells have no trouble dividing when they grow, and therefore the lump grows.
Only 30 years ago, no one knew what was controlling this growing and dividing. All researchers had seen was that an enzyme called MPF seemed to switch the cell cycle on and off, but how it worked was a mystery. Tim Hunt was eventually going to find an answer. His early work looked at red blood cells and how they made proteins, something known as protein synthesis. But after finding out everything he wanted to know, he made the crucial move into studying sea urchins.
I wanted to study sea urchin eggs because in a sea urchin egg, they do very little protein synthesis when they're shed into the sea. But if they meet a sperm and get fertilized, then they turn on protein synthesis rather sharply and a lot. And one day I did a very, very simple experiment. And what I discovered was that among the proteins whose synthesis got turned on when they were fertilized, it suddenly disappeared. And it disappeared just before the cells divided. And then it came back again, and then it disappeared again. And if you stopped it coming, then the cells couldn't divide. So it was fairly obvious to say, oh, my goodness, what's going on here is that you make something that catalyzes cell division. And then having filled up with this enzyme that catalyzes cell division, you've got to get rid of it. Otherwise, you stay in the process of division permanently. And it turned out to be the missing key to cell division. No one had realized that actually, in order for a cell to divide, you've got to get rid of the stuff that made it divide in the first place.
This stuff was named cyclin because of the way it cycled through periods of appearing and disappearing. It turned out that cyclin was one of the main components of the enzyme MPF, which gets the cell cycle going. Tim won a share of the Nobel Prize in 2001 for this discovery. But what does a protein in a sea urchin egg have to do with humans and cancer?
I remember people criticising Walter Bodmer when he was head of CRUK for hiring a yeast geneticist, Paul Nurse, because we already knew enough about cancer cells. And, you know, it was pointless studying yeast because they didn't get cancer even. But actually, then Paul discovered the partner to my protein, the cyclin-dependent kinase, and people changed their tune pretty fast because they realised, actually, that they hadn't understood. And indeed, if you'd tried to study these very fundamental processes in human cells, I don't think you would have got very far very quickly at all, because they're hidden under a lot of other stuff that makes it much, much harder to see. I mean, I was lucky in sea urchins because this particular protein was one of the most abundant proteins. It was really easy to see it. But everything in life basically works the same way. And so if you find out something in some obscure jellyfish, you know, it's going to be the same in humans.
So through the work of people like Tim, the eggs of a sea urchin are helping us to understand cancer and maybe even treat it. But as with any great scientist, answering one question means moving on to another.
The great mystery is, why don't most of the cells in our body actually grow? I always like to focus on the nose because, you know, it's very obvious, and everybody knows you have a new nose roughly every 7 years. Not a single molecule of your nose is original to your nose at birth. But the nose stays the same size. It neither grows nor shrinks. And it's very mysterious how you just stay the same. And what happens in cancers is that they start growing when they shouldn't. They somehow ignore the signals that say, you know, just stay the same. But staying the same, as anybody who's sort of walked a tightrope knows, is easier said than done, and it actually requires a lot of controls that you don't even realise that they're there because it's so stable.
The mystery of how cells know when to stop growing and what that means for cancer is being unravelled by another Cancer Research UK scientist called Nick Tappon. We'll be hearing from him and his model organism, the fruit fly, in next month's podcast.
Well, we've reached the end once more, and I hope you've enjoyed this month's podcast. You can keep up to date with all the latest progress in research from our science blog, and that's scienceblog.cancerresearchuk.org. And please let us know what you think of the podcast by leaving feedback on the blog or email your comments to podcast@cancer.org.uk. I'll be back next month with all the latest news from Cancer Research UK. So until then, goodbye.